Welcome to our interlude to Solid Ground here. Good morning. We are obviously in between our Orthodox Jewish series. Next week will be our opportunity to bring up questions and challenges to what was presented the last 2 weeks. So in doing so, for those of you that are interested and inclined, let me recommend a series of books to you. The books are by a Jew who believes in Jesus as Messiah named Michael Brown. Michael Brown originally kind of got started doing, and if you look at his lectures online, they're doing something called Countering the Counter-Missionaries. So Effie and Asher they're not actually full on counter-missionaries, but they're in that vein. The initial idea was Christians were coming and talking to Jewish people in the Orthodox community, and they were becoming Messianic Jews, and the Orthodox community said, we have to do something about this, and they kind of came up with the counter-missionary model. Well, the apologists on the Orthodox side, in my opinion, are kind of the grandchildren or the children of this effort, in that they are derivative of that kind of mission and attempt. But, so Michael Brown got his start countering the counter-missionaries. So, you know, so it seems like a cat and mouse game here, and so he's two steps into it, now these guys are three steps into it. At any rate, he has some online resources that you can find at his website. The two places that I look for, whether you're an Apple guy or an HTC/Google guy or girl, the app stores and the libraries there have his works, which are called Jewish Responses to Jesus. Let me double check that. I'll tell you again at the end of class. And then he's got a series of YouTube lectures where he basically has a condensed, poorly presented version of this one. But it's over, I think, like 4 days. So it's probably a total of 8 to 10 hours worth of lecture, which is a lot. But at any rate, so most of the material that I would be presenting that counters their position is to be found in Brown's work. And I think that he does a really good job. And I would say, I don't know him terribly well, but his mindset, in my opinion, from what I can hear, is pretty accurate. In fact, you know, I would say we would do well to adopt some more of his mindset. But there you go. So today was a class by request. Gender and Christianity was the general topic. And I'd like to do this backwards to the way that we normally do it. That is to say, let's start with discussion. And then I have some ideas, I think, about what might be a helpful solution to this. And so maybe 20 minutes into the discussion, I'll interject one set of thoughts. And then about half an hour into it, we can talk some targeted things and then get some reaction to that. So let's just kick right off with maybe the first question is, what is this class about? Because I know there are some people who have suggested it. What did you want to hear? Let's make sure that we're addressing those things. What are the major questions when it comes to the question of gender and, I assume, its intersection with Christianity? Or answer whatever question you want. Yes, sir.
I would like to know how Christians feel about transgenders who decide to change to the gender they pretty sure they are.
Did you say Bruce Jenner?
I think, if I understood right, that's part of the core of some of the questions that people are asking. So I think that's a question that should definitely be answered.
Yeah, is it wrong for a Christian to change their gender if one can change their gender?
Okay. Yeah, right. Can gender be changed? And if so, ought a Christian do it? All right. That's another dubiousness. Question two that he's already got. Other questions or responses to these?
I think there were kind of two threads in the emails, and one was gender identity, and the other was gender equality. So both balanced.
And in that, are there gender roles? Should there be gender roles? Is there a gender distinction that we should be living by?
Okay. That's, I think excellent questions as well. All these follow.
And as Christians, are we ever wrong in subverting those traditional gender roles?
Interesting. Okay, I hadn't thought of that. Yes? Other questions or responses to these? Anybody want to take initial stabs at it? Or?
Well, he mentioned Bruce Jenner. Bruce Jenner waited until he was, I think, almost my age before he decided where he apparently felt that he was a woman all of his life. He was good looking when he was a but he decided that he really was a woman, and he late age, he changed himself.
Right.
Now, what's wrong with that?
Right. So, what's wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with that, and what's wrong with that?
Because well, I assume
Christianity is going to say probably, but the question is, so if you go looking through the Bible for a single verse that says men should be men and women should be women, and one cannot change their gender, there are nothing in there that will say that. There's nothing in there that will say that. In the same way that you can't go through the Bible and read right out of the pages of Scripture, abortion is wrong. Right? That is a theological conclusion based on a set of other portions of Scripture. And so I think one of the reasons the gender question is a popular one, so to speak, or one of where there's some fuzziness, is it's not directly addressed in Scripture, at least in the way that some of these questions were framed already. What else? What are your thoughts on it? Or I can go straight into this lecture.
One of the main questions or things that would follow from it, if one can do that, is I mentioned this in the email. Dennis, you like this question, I think.
I like all your questions.
We can tell Dennis was if a Christian man is gay and he has boyfriend, but he doesn't want to live in sin, can he or his boyfriend change gender so that he
is not living in a lifestyle of?
No, they can't.
Peter's the kind of guy that will come up with that solution. Well, clearly the Bible says this is wrong, but if this can be done, then it's no longer wrong, is it? You want to be like, well, okay, get your statements right then.
Well, I have an answer to that. But they can't.
They can't change.
If you're a gay man, right, you have to pass some certain qualifications before they will change your gender. Just because you're a gay man doesn't mean that you can become a woman.
That's an ethical consideration amongst physicians, right? That has nothing to do with what the Bible says about whether or not that's permissible, right? That's what we're concerned about. We're not concerned about whether a doctor would be willing to do a procedure according to their own policies.
I think you would find that 99% of gay men are satisfied with being a man. Their sexual orientation is just with men. They don't want to become a woman.
Right, but if they're...
Here's a better question. Let's say I'm really a woman. Let's say I'm really a woman, basically, and I'm qualified to get a transgender operation, and I become a woman. If I have sex with you, does that make me a homosexual?
Right, so the question there is the same question. The real question is, can you legitimately change gender? Yes, ma'am.
As someone who has a ton of friends that are transgender...
A ton?
I go to art school, but...
10 friends, average school attendance.
When we approach this topic, someone says they're transgender, that's like any of us in here saying we're heterosexual, or I'm a woman, I'm a man. You can't just throw it around like, oh, I'm just going to change my gender. That's something they feel, like, within the core of their being. Like, that's something that throbs in their heart. Like, I am this. Like, this is my identity. Like, who I am as a person is not, like, they don't feel like
so
they are.
I will occasionally be writing words up on the board that I think will clue us into what it is. And, some of these words I should have written already, but the first main one is going to be this word. But I'm going to write less of it. So, did you finish what you were saying?
No. It's going to take a while.
So while Skylar's gathering his thoughts, clearly today we have a larger portion of the youth that are identifying themselves as transgender than we have in the past, right? There's even a movement now to introduce new pronouns, etc. I mean, and this is a legitimate thing, right? So G be, is one of the options, or are they going to go to use they as an indeterminate singular pronoun? All of this is very much alive in American culture.
And by very much alive, to up the ante a little bit, Fairfax County Schools have just adopted this as this will be official policy taught in Fairfax County Schools.
Yeah. So But I mean, I guess my question is, how much of this increase in transgender identification is a result of the culture in which children are growing up today versus the culture that people used to grow up in? It's now a new way to bring attention to yourself. Hey, I have a personal problem. I'm going to identify as transgender to make myself stick out. I think people have, that there's always been a trend in human culture to do that, to identify yourself with some subculture to make yourself stick out, right? In the 80s, it was much more benign. It was the goth look, right? Right. This same group of teens was, I'm goth, I'm going to dress
like
a vampire.
In the 60s, it was something else. In the 40s, it was something else.
Right.
So every generation
there's always
a wave.
Exactly. There's always been a wave of some subculture for people to identify with to say, I stick out, I'm different.
Breaks them off from the traditional.
Well, dressing goth is a little different than changing your sex.
I agree. Yeah. But maybe, they're not actually changing their gender. They're saying they want to change their gender.
Maybe they're just more out of the closet now than they used to be, because it's starting to become... It's like homosexuals. Remember Jerry Smith? Anybody here remember Jerry Smith and the Redskins? Jesus, am I.
Can I respond to that?
You're the senior member of the class. Go ahead.
At least today.
I think transgender, you can't describe it as like a thing, like a phase, because the highest rate in teen suicides are transgender kids. Like they're not accepted in the gay community or the heterosexual. Like it's very difficult to be trans because nobody wants to be affiliated sexually with you.
That's a good point, right there.
That it's not fun being trans because they're the ones that get bullied, the highest amounts of bullying rates, the highest amount of suicide rates. Like that's not a fun place. That's not something people. That's not easy. That's not something you'd be like, oh, I'm trans, because that will start a world of pain for you. That's
but,
not something you take
this,
lightly.
This argument, though, is also being made from the LGBT community groups. So a lesbian friend of our family makes the same point. Why would I choose to be lesbian? It's a hard road to walk. There's no real world reward for it. So although maybe the trans population can come to be the apex of the difficult, that is an argument that's made on all sides. And honestly, an argument that's made on the Christian side. Why would I choose to be Christian? It's hard. You know, I have to repress some of my own desires. I have to do so. If you want to complain, everybody has something to complain somewhere, but some people may have more room than others.
You know? Right. And so, but again, you get into a chicken and an egg problem, right? Are they choosing to identify trans?
Not
because...
as transgender. There will be no chicken or egg.
Sorry. Are they choosing to identify as transgender because they have other psychological issues that would otherwise drive them to higher rates of suicide, depression, etc.?
There's the political, the political aspect of it, okay, the political correctness, which goes along with political. There's the religious aspect of it, and then there's just the plain old ordinary. Neither one of those two things. So one of the points, I didn't see these email threads, so I apologize if I'm way off track, but when does the stamp of gender occur? When does that occur? And I'm not trying to say that when does life begin in the womb.
Were you talking about gender or sex?
I'm trying to say gender identification. Maybe I should have put identification with gender, so thank you. But when does gender identification occur? All right, you know, I've had, four children. I know that, up until they're around 4 or 5 years old, there really is no difference in their behaviors or anything else. They start to break off around 5 years, about 5 years of age. And they start to act a little differently.
I would disagree with that. My daughter and my boys were radically different, right? At the stage where they're still crawling, their behaviors were radically different.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I'm going to back this up and ask the unpopular question, can gender be changed? Like, regardless of what we want, regardless of what operation you can have done now, in God's eyes, can someone change the gender?
Well, look at Renee Richards. She's...
Right.
Don't say who's Renee Richards, please.
Look at Chaz Bono.
Who? I didn't hear you say
Chastity. Chastity Bono. Sonny Bono and Cher's child.
Chastity, yeah. She's transgender.
If gender can be changed, then
what
else can
she
change?
Can
someone change
their race? Well, she's not a lesbian.
Peter's idea.
All of them.
Why
is that different?
Yeah.
I think it's different because with race and gender, etc., I think gender is something that This is a statement I'm just throwing out here. I feel like gender is something that's very culturally created. Like girls like boys, racism is definitely culturally. But the thing is, I think what we're thinking about gender is this is two different things, but race, like your ethnicity, is something that's all connected. Everyone, it's not like you're black, I'm white, you're Asian, like blah blah blah. It's that we're all a differentiation of the same color.
Well,
the
thing is,
we're not like completely, we're not different people, we're not different like species. The thing is, gender is separated by a physical difference. I don't think gender is something that
you have to
mental difference.
I don't think there's
physical difference, but the mental difference is something
that I think you create psychologically with your culture.
The first thing that we need to do is sexual, the biological versus gender.
Okay, so this is the most profound, this is the most definitional point. And he's right, so this is where I will stand up and talk for a second. And we'll back
a second?
So, let me give you both sides of the equation. On one side, gender is an identity, is an idea. And we as free people with free will have, if not the right, we certainly have the ability to do whatever we want with our identity. That is to say, who can tell you that who you are? And I'll leave that as an open question because there, as you know, there are some philosophical ways to answer that one. But who has the right, if anybody other than you, to tell you who you are? On the other side, let's take it from a purely scientific perspective, where sex really, and by sex I just mean male versus female, or in the case of other biological organisms, things that are hermaphroditic or asexual as a base level. When you look at a human being and you say to a scientist, is this human being male or female? They have a way to test that and tell you conclusively. So even if you are a human being, when you go and pull genes out of them and say, this guy has an X chromosome and a Y chromosome, so this is a male. Or it may be another way of saying it, you find blood on a crime scene. You pull it out, nobody's like, well, I'm not really sure what his gender identity is, but this is a guy. You know, the bottom line is, that's a male. I can identify, so I'm driving, this is Sterling, Virginia. I'm driving past where the Famous Dave's is, and it's the Starbucks there, and there's a lady sitting in Starbucks with a leash on a wolf. Now, almost no wolves here in America, except that you can find out in other places, are 100% wolf anymore. Most of them are crossbred with huskies. So this is some wolf-husky hybrid, but the wolf part of it, there's a lot. So I stop and I'm like, you have a wolf? And she's like, yes. And so very quickly, I found out that the reason that she has a wolf is because it's her spirit brother and it's her totem. And so I stopped talking to her shortly after. And I really know how to react to that. But I had a very high affinity for these stories. I love Jack London stories. I liked Alaska. Kind of frontier, and you know, when you're a little kid, you're like, I want to be a wolf kind of thing. I can, I'm just going to stand on this side of the equation here, I can identify as a wolf if I want to. I can, to use today's terminology, present as a wolf if I want to. In fact, you'll see people doing weird surgical things to make themselves look like cats and all that kind of stuff. But the biological fact is, a human being cannot be a wolf. The biological fact is, a male cannot be a female. You are born with a sex. Now the question is gender identity different than sexual identity?
Well, so even to get to the scientific point, Scott, right, we do have some confusion, right? We have XXY syndrome, and we have hermaphrodites, right, where it's not clear biologically from examining the body which gender you have. So even scientifically, we have those gray.
Those are very small. And so to treat those, I would rather treat those at the end, because 99.99 some odd percent of the people we're talking about are people who are not XXY, et cetera. And ultimately, I think when we see the answer that I would like to present, at least, you'll see that it will address those without having to grapple.
But it does kind of point out that anything is possible, even in nature.
What do you mean by anything is possible?
Well, you might have like a hermaphrodite or a futanari, you know,
right.
Something like that. I don't know if it exists beyond me. But if it does exist, it could exist. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, do werewolves exist? You know,
hell yes.
That's the kind of idea. That
we're
talking. Yeah. To be too much. But I mean, that idea.
Well, yeah.
There are people who live today convinced, at least in their own minds, whatever psychological state it is, that they're vampires. They drink blood, they do all that kind of stuff, because they, the bottom line is they want to identify with this fictional thing. So, now let's go back and ask this question right here, gender identity versus sex identity. This is something that can be established scientifically. This right here, if it's not, if by gender we mean male or female, then there is a right and a wrong answer to that, scientifically speaking. If what we mean is what you want to be, or how you feel, because here's the other problem, and this has gotten some significant attention and scientific research, and they've actually come up with a kind of scale for this type of thing, that for people to look into and do this kind of research, is male and female a binary thing? It's either zero or one, or is it a spectrum? And the argument for spectrum is something like this. When you look at a platoon of Marines, you know, there is a masculinity about that doesn't seem to be the same of maybe, let's say, an acting troop somewhere else, or maybe of the book club of guys. So these are all guys, right? And does that mean that because these look like a certain version of men, or a certain body type, or a certain level of testosterone, or all the different things that we want to throw out there, to which we attribute things like maleness, is there an ultimate male? Is there a male ideal? And is deviation from the male ideal automatically in the direction of femininity?
What would
That's
you call
the assumption, right?
What so would you call that Marine we met at Morton's the other night?
Yeah, so exactly. I mean, he's right in the, there was a Marine there who, in 2 minutes of interacting, Dennis and I were like, I think he may be playing for the other team, kind of idea. So a Marine aviator.
He was hot for me until he saw you.
I don't think that was the case. But the question is this. We tend to look at Conan the Barbarian and say that's as male as you can get, right? Whereas big muscles, broad shoulders, high muscle to body fat ratio, strong chins, all these other things that we call, that ultimately, like, that guy looks like a real man. Is that the ideal of maleness? Is that the ideal of maleness? And is anything less than that less masculine? Now this is what the, I think it's called the Kinsey scale. This is what the kind of Kinsey scale idea is, and it not only is with the identity, it's also with the kind of attraction. Am I attracted to this side? Am I attracted to that side? Am I only attracted to men? Am I only attracted to women? Am I attracted to people on the scale? Am I only attracted to masculine men? Am I only attracted to ultra feminine women? You know, is the ultimate male only attracted to the ultimate girly girl? That kind of thing. And is the ultimate girly girl even right? Is the idea of a girl who wears high heels and everything is pink and her car is pink and, you know, is that the ultimate girl? Or is that what society has marketed us into believing? You know what I mean? If you look at the women, even back in the ancient Greek days this was going on, the women of Sparta and the women of Corinth were completely different. Women of Corinth were more like today's women of makeup and dress and that kind of stuff makes you. The women of Sparta were like a good athletic female form is more female than this painted up version. This is theatrical and this is natural. So it was kind of almost the natural versus the makeup version, the Barbie doll versus the, I don't even know what the other version is. Even in ancient Greece this was going on. So this is not new data. So to the point Carl brought up, we see an increase in people identifying this way. If this has really been around for at least the Greek period, we should at least consider the possibility that some of this is culturally influenced. Now the question is it a cultural freeing of stuff that has always been subtext, or is it cultural influence that's causing people who are otherwise counterculture to identify with this, kind of the ultimate counterculture, the breaking of stereotypes, etc. So all of these things are things about which we have to consider, but I would raise to you for at least this point in the discussion that the real question is, since there's a scientific answer to what sex this creature is, this human is, and that there is an identity component, how should a thinking human being match identity and sex? Because certainly gender has something to do with that. It's talking about sex, and it's talking about identity. So the real question is there a right way to identify sex and gender? And if the answer is no, the reason I want to throw out no is there's nothing that stops me from self-identifying as a wolf. I want to be a wolf. I'm going to become a wolf. I want you to think of me as a wolf. Stop calling me a human being. You don't appreciate me. Right? Now, that's a little bit more extreme, and I think we might say that's borderline unreasonable. But now, is it unreasonable to do that with gender or sex? That's the question. All right, back to the class.
Of all these things, homosexuality, gay or lesbian, transgender, whatever, all these things, if somebody wants to do something, be something, and it's not hurting anybody, what's the problem with any of it as far as Christianity is concerned?
There's the societal issue and then the Christian issues, and those are two separate things.
I know.
So that's, you know, which one of those arguments do you want to have? Which discussion do you want to have first?
The Christian.
The Christian one is probably easier.
Christian one is definitely easier.
Right. But the flip side of that is part of the problem, gender identity versus sexual identity, like a lot of other things, the confusion comes from the fact that we use the same term. So it's, you are biologically a male, and the gender identity that goes with that, we have assigned the same terminology and the same binary construct. So it inherits a lot of that, and it, kind of like you said, the first thing you have to decide is this an argument that from a gender identity perspective, do we have to sort this out? Or can you just go...
I didn't realize we were going to get to that point this quickly. So Skylar fast forwards us to the real question. Now, let me tell you, I'll give you an opinion, and then you.
What if I just want to do it? What's wrong with that?
It doesn't harm me at all.
Okay, that's my question.
They call that bi-curious.
Right.
All right. So here's the idea: is let's say that this is Conan, and
yeah.
I don't know. Who's a gentle soul male that we know of? Everybody.
Mr. Peebles.
Who?
Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers is the whole thing.
I got somebody else. Woody Herman is gay.
Let's just call this guy an ultimate poet. Okay.
Fine, I got another name for the male.
Or in the ancient Greek terms, Achilles and Paris.
Scott, I got another name.
I like that was straight fire.
I've got another name for the ultimate male besides Conan, because he didn't exist.
Right.
Rock Hudson.
Okay. All right. So if we think about this,
look at the guy.
Yes. The reason I like Achilles in Paris is it takes us out of our cultural context and puts us back and have to ask the question back. Is Achilles more male than Paris is? Is Achilles more of a man than Paris is? If you're going to say yes, then you have to say why. And the answer is, well, he's a warrior. And being a warrior is more male than being a poet. Is that true? I mean, that's the assumption, right? And so that's what I would say. I wouldn't phrase it in these terms, but I think the idea is, I don't know that you can make that point accurately.
Well, the examples that you're giving, male.
Yeah. Right. So I'm just picking one. So we could do the opposite, where you stay in the old here. This could be
Artemis.
Yes.
Hey, girl, we're on the same page.
So this is Artemis, and this is
Aphrodite.
Athena.
Aphrodite.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I need to be the female. Alright, so we're going to do some ancient Greek context using fictional characters or semi-historical character, one or two of them. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't intentional, it was just I was going to start with one gender, because I happen to be one, I favor that one, which I think you'll find happens in history far too often. So, what we're asking is Aphrodite more of a lady, a woman, than Artemis? Is Achilles more of a man than Paris? And if the answer is, in your mind, is yes, then you have at least an unstated standard of what is male and what is female. And not only what is male and what is female, remember, because I'm dividing all, you know, chromosome, here's XY, and here's XX, leaving out the ones that we still need to deal with. But But basically, if you can do this in the scientific space, that this spectrum still exists within this gender.
Is this a scale based on, based purely on observed behavior?
So,
because it seems like we've quantified three different things in our attempt to identify gender. One being behavior.
Yes.
Another being anatomy.
Right.
And a third being internal gender preference, what I think inside of me I want to be.
And it's good that we brought all three of those up, because all three of those are in our minds when we're saying it. And what we need to find, what we're searching for here, is a link between them. Is there a correct way, whether we mean that scientifically correctly or whether we mean that in some sort of moral, philosophical sense correctly, is there a correct way to unite all three of these ideas, or is there no unification and anything goes? Because both of those are potential answers.
Well, I know this is throwing like a wrench into the machine.
That's your job.
But awesome. That is my job, but there should, this sounds weird. I know a lot of asexuals, and I know a lot of ace of spades, aromantic asexual.
Asexuality, LGBTQA
is the new flag.
You know a lot of asexuals.
Asexuals are people
I know who they are, I'm just saying, you know a lot of them.
Yeah.
I know.
And aromantics. I know, like, surprising ace of spades, aromantic asexual, so they don't feel romantic attraction or sexual. It's not sad, it's actually very interesting. They get great relationship advice.
So, before you throw this under the bus, before you think that this is not reasonable to talk about or consider, let me give you a verse.
It's real.
Some men are made eunuchs by men. Some men choose to be eunuchs, and some men choose to be eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Okay, so this is the idea. This is the idea here of Jesus actually treated a portion of this topic.
Right.
And so the idea of someone who is asexual is something that he references. And he actually references it as a positive in pursuit of the kingdom of heaven, which has been interpreted by the church very widely and today is why priests are celibate officially in the Catholic Church.
Supposedly.
Priests are not asexual.
That's different. Choosing celibacy is different than not. Like,
but are we not talking about choice here? That's one of our key things.
But that's choice of behavior, not necessarily choice of gender.
Yeah, remember, Jesus was talking about a couple of things. Some that were born eunuchs, some made eunuchs by men,
right.
And some who chose to be eunuchs. So some, he's saying, started from the womb, asexual. Some got made that way because of barbaric practice, and some chose to be that way. So we see at least all three of those. So back to your point.
But so when we talk about this, like when we are saying like the gender versus the sex, there are, I was reading that sex is the sex, but when you say that, when you're like, oh, I identify as a woman who likes men, and so is that like women and men having sex, or I identify as a man who likes men and have sex with men, and that would mean that those men would become transgender to stop that or anything, but as people who are asexual, that would change the game, because there is no definition of I'm a woman because I, have matching parts to have sex with men. It's I'm asexual and I will choose my gender identity as that is what a part of your identity is, but it's not defined by anything sexual or chemical. So it's something that completely levels the playing field into a whole different.
So in this case, what we're really pausing, if you're not catching what's being said entirely, is is there a component to male-female that is completely separate from the physical? This is a mental construct, and it is a mental identification. And of course, I would argue, I think any philosopher would argue, that identity is a mental property, right? You can choose to identify, as a chair.
It's conditional.
A mental thing. And since it is conditional, but it can, in the same way that it can be accurate or inaccurate, depending on what you're talking about, the real question is, can you accurately be in this kind of gear and identify as a woman? That's one of the questions that we're trying to answer.
I think just to get back to the scale a little bit, Scott, I mean, it seems to me that the scale shouldn't be, the scale as described so far should not be a measure of male versus female, right? So when we look at the Conan or the Achilles example, all we're really saying is great athlete. Right? That's right. Essentially what we're boiling it down to. You could add a warrior ethos or whatever you want in there, but essentially we're saying athlete. When we say Paris, what we're saying is intellectual, academic, right? males and females can both excel in the athletic realm or the intellectual realm, regardless of their gender, regardless of their sexual preference. Yep. So it seems to me that's a false cultural construct to say that those things correspond to how male or how female some person is.
And this is a good point, and let me raise it. For those of you who have been to more primitive cultures or less industrially developed nations.
You mean like the Midwest?
This is an issue more. It's a different issue here than it is in the Middle East, in, let's say, somewhere like Afghanistan, where it's still relatively primitive. You can go there, and I've described it in this class before, as if you want to know what it's like in Genesis, go to the south of Afghanistan to where the nomadic tribes are, and that's Genesis with guns. Basically, the guy's got a gun, but other than that, it's the exact same thing. So, Genesis with guns and trucks, when you go and you look at why and what this means, these guys right here have to have certain skill sets, and this is where the warrior mindset, and this is where the maleness thing that we think about comes from, because these end up being the hunters and protectors and stuff. These end up being the caretakers and all the stuff we identify with traditional gender roles shows up naturally because of deltas. Deltas in physical strength, deltas in endurance, deltas in a bunch of other things. Now, it's not to say, like, I went to TBF, the basic school, with a female Naval Academy Marine who could run faster than I could on any given day. She's a marathon runner, all that stuff. She'd outrun me any day. But her upper body strength. So we were having the disagreement. This was back when should women be in the infantry was a real question, and the Marine Corps has, I guess, come to a conclusion, which is no now. But the question was starting to get asked there. And this girl wanted to be an infantry Marine. And she had the heart to do it. There was no doubt about it. And she could run forever. And so when you loaded her up with 70 pounds of gear, and we were running through the combat town or whatever, she and I were having a dialogue back and forth. I was representing the opinion of no, I wouldn't put women in combat. She was representing the yes. My reasons for it are different than you might think, but I had a reason for saying that. So she's trying to, we now vault up onto, you know, we're trying to climb this concrete wall about this big, and the whole squad's moving through. And you generally turn around and the person vaults up, and then you kind of help the person behind you up onto the wall initially, and then they lift themselves up. So I helped her up initially, turned around, and I turned around, and she's still trying to push herself up there. Because not she lacked heart, not that she didn't have the leg power. Her leg power probably exceeded mine. She didn't have the upper body strength to haul 70 pounds of gear plus 120, 130 pounds of girl up the wall. And I asked, I was like, you still want to be in the infantry? You think you can do it? And she said, no. I helped her up and off we ran. So not to say that she's less worthy. The idea was, I'm not equipped to do that. Now, there's a whole slew of things that I'm not equipped to do either. All right, so as a kid, I was a sprinter. I'm the world's worst long-distance runner. I'm terrible at it. And I've tried really hard to be better at it, and I'm still terrible at it. Just not well equipped to do it. Something else I'm not well equipped to do, play basketball. The reason I should be immediately obvious. Some things that are less obvious, playing a musical instrument, because of the way that my mind functions, repetitive action on a time scale is, some people are like, Scott, you're a smart guy. You want to see me look like I need to be, like, literally, and I don't mean this pejoratively or anything else, I would be a special education case in music, because I literally cannot repeat the same action 10 times in a row with any regularity. I lack the ability in total. So put me on a set of drums, 15 seconds into it, I'm off beat. Put me on a guitar, my fingers do not work.
Just
I've tried as hard as I can.
But what does this got to do with gender?
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, ma'am. So the idea is, if there are certain things for which you are made, and certain things for which you are not, now this implies that there's a maker. Or maybe another way of saying it is that there are certain things that you can do easily, and certain things that you can't do easily, and certain things that you cannot do at all. What of those things do you choose to do? Because we're talking about choice. We're talking about choice. And the implication when it comes to gender identity is always this. I ought to have a right to be this way because that's the easiest thing for me to choose. that that's my natural way of being. So that is to say, a guy who's very talented at playing the guitar, the parents are wrong to tell him, you need to be an engineer, boy, stop playing the guitar. Well, maybe that's his gift, maybe that's what he ought to do. Right? We feel good about saying that in this culture. We say the same thing about the mathematician kid. The kid's a good mathematician, but his dad wants him to be a football player, a good baseball player, and he's just no good at it. Don't we think the dad is terrible? He gets his little, you know, scrawny kid with a big head up to bat, and he can't even swing before the ball's across the plate. And he's like, come on, boy, swing harder. And we're like, you're a complete jerk, because you don't recognize that kid's talent is in doing abstract mathematical operations that dad can never do. It's not hitting the ball. So we identify with this very clearly. Why do we do this differently when it comes to gender? Why do we do it differently when it comes to gender? And what I would suggest to you, and I do want to move, maybe I'll move a little faster than I hoped, is that it almost boils down to this right here. What is your identity? Do you have an identity? Now, this answer is going to be identical to morality, because the question is really, ought you think of yourself with a certain identity? Ought you think of yourself as male? Ought you think of yourself as female? Not can you, of course you can. The question is, ought you do so? So if you're going to say a scientific ought, then what you ought to say, identify, is I'm XY. What do you mean by that? Well, it means that I can naturally reproduce with an XX with all these other listed possibilities. That's the maximum statement that you can make when it comes to the scientific definition. From the mental side, from the identification side, the question is, what ought I think, if anything? Now, you can do this two ways. You can say, there is no thought police, there is no ought, in which case, identify as whatever you want. But when somebody comes and tells you they want to identify as a wolf, you better have as straight a face as when they come to you and say they want to identify as a woman when they're a man. Because there's no difference.
No
difference at all, because there is no ought. So see, you're going to put an ought on top of it and be like, no. You ought to be able to identify as a woman, but you ought not be able to tell people you're a wolf. Who are you to say?
No.
And the question is, if there is a who in here today, then identity is derivative of what?
But Scott, you can become a woman, but you can't become a wolf.
No, you can't become a woman.
You can't change all the
I go looking through my cells, and you're still going to come up with...
No, I mean someone who identifies... If I identify as a woman...
Present. You can present as a woman.
Yeah.
You can't change the genetic code to become X, instead of X1. Right.
Probably not, but I can bring you damn close.
Every one of your cells is still going to be XY.
But my whole point... If somebody wants to do this, what's wrong with it?
That's the question is, if there's an ought... Then if there's an ought, is a prescription. A prescription requires a prescriber. The argument for identity is the same as the argument for morality. Either there's a moral prescriber that tells you what you can, ought, and ought not do. Mm-hmm. You ought to be nice to people and not slap people in the face. It's the same guy or gal or whatever that's going to say you ought to think of yourself in this way or that way. Before your head explodes, go ahead. What is it?
But if that exists, then part of that designer, part of that construct is free will. Like, free will plays into this, and you create, in every other aspect, we say, unless you are a pure Calvinist construction, we say you create your identity. You become the person that you want to be in every other aspect.
Right. Now, the question is, ought you do that?
Ought you do that?
Ought you
yes.
do that? Ought you self-create ought identity, or ought you receive identity?
Oh.
Wow.
What did you say? What did you just say?
That only makes sense. So the question here is identity. Is that something that we create ourselves, or that we ought to create ourselves, or is that something that we ought to receive from something or someone else?
And Scott, so just to clarify, what you're saying is it's no different than a moral... an objective moral standard that says thou shalt not murder.
Yes.
Right? And
is that
it's
your
choice whether or not you murder someone when you get angry with them.
Right. So that would be an inference right. that you would just, make from this. But the idea is, and let me put it in Christianese so that the Christians here will understand what I'm talking about. Do you have an identity in Christ?
Identity what?
Does Christ have a purpose for you? Does he have a role for you? Does he have a job for you? Is there something you're supposed to do for Christ. And what we really mean is, if Christ is calling the shots, what orders does he give you? Now, let me put it in military terms, because we understand this around here. Everybody, when they go to, not everybody, I would say maybe four kinds of people that go to the Marine Corps basic school. And in the basic school, when you go to be an officer, you show up, only one set of people knows what they're going to be. Two sets of people know what they're going to be. If you're a lawyer or you're a pilot, you're on a contract to be that. Is there anything else?
No, that's it.
So aside from that group of people, the rest of them, the vast majority of the class, doesn't know what they're going to be in the Marine Corps. They want to be a tank driver. They want to be an infantryman. They want to be an artillery guy, or they want to be a logistician, but they don't know. Three quarters of the way through the course, they rack and stack how you are, and then they break it into thirds, and they get the first guy in the first third, his first choice of what he gets, and then the first guy in the second third in the order of merit gets the second choice, and the guy in the bottom third, the first guy in the bottom third, gets the third choice. It's called a quality spread, so you don't end up with a bunch of terrific guys, supposedly, in one type, and a bunch of bums in the
it's
other.
It's like the draft.
Yeah. So, in the Marine Corps, you sign up and you say this: I want to be a Marine. Unless you're a pilot or a lawyer, then I guess you're special. But you sign up and you say that you want to be a Marine, and the Marine Corps tells you what you're going to do. Now, we may not like that. So I went there and I wanted to be an infantryman because I wanted to be a force recon guy. But I did not have the right to complain if I ended up drawing artillery or logistics. Because I showed up and said, I will submit myself to the Marine Corps because I want to be a Marine. The same is true in Christianity. When you show up in Christianity, which arguably you can do from birth in some ways, when you show up for Christianity, you say to the Lord, I have desires in my life. I want to be, and let me tell you how this worked out in my life. For the wrong reason, but I grew up on fighter planes and Black Sheep Squadron and World War II fighter pilot. That's really, and if I could be anything, I probably wanted to be a World War II fighter pilot. So I went to the Air Force Academy. I was a pilot before I got there, a commercial pilot by the time I was 18 years old. I was certain I was going to fly. And I tried my best. And I got this close. They wavered me to be a navigator. I told them I'm not going to do it. And I cross-commissioned the Marine Corps because my idea was basically, if I'm not going to play, I'm taking my ball and going home. And the Marine Corps, everybody respected, so I figured I'd go do that and fight in the Marine Corps. So when it showed up, when it came to Afghanistan time, I looked at two different possibilities. I could either be a ground warrior in special operations with the Marine Corps, or I could have been flying F-22s. You know what F-22 pilots do in Afghanistan?
Nothing.
But which of those two options, if my goal was to be a combat warrior, which it was when you're a kid, that's the kind of thing that you think. I would not recommend thinking that way. It's not a good way to think. But if my goal was that, which of those two paths was the better path? Being a ground pound and Marine, right? If God is who we say he is, then he knows what we want most. And he's the one that's going to tell you, I know you think you want to be a fighter pilot. I want you to crawl around in the mud with a rifle. Lord, perhaps you didn't get my wish sheet. I told you what I said. I wrote it in detail. I gave you good reasons and logic for them of why I would be an excellent pilot. I have these particular traits. I took a personality test that said I would be a really good pilot. My flight instructor says I'm one of the best pilots he's ever seen, which he tells everybody that's paying him money to teach him how to fly.
My wife says I look good at an airplane.
Right. Exactly. So, Lord, I am born to be a pilot. That's great. Pick up a rifle and start walking.
So you're analogizing Jesus with the Marine Corps?
Because everybody can get the idea. The idea is authority. The idea is authority, and who has the right to tell you what you should be doing?
Versus free will.
Versus free will. Now, the difference is, does the Marine Corps rob everybody of their free will?
No.
So the difference is...
No, you have free will, but you choose. You sign a contract, right? When I joined the Marine Corps, I went through the same process Scott did. I signed a contract that said, I'm going in on an open ground contract. Whatever the Marine Corps says for me to do, I will do it. I have free will. I can still violate my contract, right? Say I'm walking away from the Marine Corps, and then they can punish me under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So I still have free will, but I opted to follow the authority that I submitted myself to when I went through the process.
Yeah, you still have free will, but you choose to freely submit and obey.
Okay, and that is the essence of what it is to be Christian. Now, the difference in the Marine Corps and God. The Commandant, although in Marine understanding, he ranks just barely below God. God, what's the difference between God and the Commandant? What's the Commandant's goal? Winning wars for America. What is God's goal?
Win souls for him.
Win souls for him, and ultimately, I would say, what is the purpose of winning souls for him? is to be with him forever. What's the purpose of being God with God forever? Does he just need pets? No, it's about love. And if the God is who we think he is, then what he actually wants is our maximal happiness. This is the hard thing to say to somebody who's gender confused. And I'm going to, and so rather than making it pointed, I will say it about a friend of ours, who this lesbian friend I keep referencing all the time, who was molested when she was younger, and you know, wasn't her fault and all this terrible stuff. At any rate, she's married now to another girl. What do they want now? Anybody guess?
Kids.
Okay, and for those of you that have kids, when it's your, and this is to say nothing against adopted kids, because adopted kids are even another level, but when you as a parent see your own child, there's a level of happiness there, a level of reward, a level of stuff that you cannot have otherwise. And not everybody gets that. And you know what? Being rich has advantages to it, being poor, but not everybody gets to be rich. Being a great athlete has advantages. But, you know, Dennis's ability to play football and basketball, I wish I had, but, you know, I don't sit around and cry about it.
Yeah, all kids are cute, but your kids are cuter.
Right, yes, right. You all don't understand this because your kids aren't as cute and as smart as mine are. But ultimately, yes, that's the point. That's the point. So exactly what you're getting to. God knows what will make it. In fact, he's programmed us to be happy in a way that goes along with our purpose. Now, this is important because what it means is somebody who genuinely is, and we'll use the modern term, asexual, where Jesus' term would be some men are born eunuchs. That man, if he decides that this is what a man is, and that he has to be a husband and father, and that he has to fulfill this idea, what's he going to be?
Miserable.
Unhappy. Why? And what is he also doing? He's actually violating both of these, because that's not his identity in Christ, and that's not what he's told to do. God's purpose for him is being asexual. Now, how many of those are there? I don't know. What I will tell you is, from my reading and my understanding of people, the vast number of people who identify as that aren't doing it because that's who they are. They're doing it for a bunch of other reasons. Who they are is, in fact, a choice. You get to choose with whom you want to, what you want to identify. That's the case. Now, the question is, let's use the military example. In my case, I could have chosen to be a fighter pilot, or I could have chosen to be a Marine, infantryman. As it is, God kind of worked it out for me, but let's imagine that I could have actualized either. What if God had shown me that and said, you could reap the reward that you want by being a ground guy, or you can fly around in circles two countries away in an F-22. Which one of those do you want to do? Then I'm like, you know what, I still want to be a fighter pilot. And I go and I choose unhappiness. That's foolish. Well, that's the same thing that we're talking about here.
So
if God has an identity for you, so if God does want you to be Achilles or Conan, or, you know, not exactly, but the manly man who's, you know, married and has 10 kids and whatever, Bob Scholl, you know, 9 kids, and a football player and all that kind of stuff. He wants you to be Bob Scholl, or does he want you to be a legitimate celibate priest? All right, so the only way to answer that question correctly, and this is about correct, is to know your purpose that God has for you, and to know who your identity is in Christ. Or in the body example, and then Peter and Guy. In the body example, it's, are you a hand? Are you an eye? Or, you know, is Christ is the head? What does this mean? In the same way we have roles in the church, we have roles in our family, in society, and all those kind of things. God sets those roles for the Christian. If you're not a Christian, in my opinion, you got no right to tell anybody what they can and can't be, who they can and can't identify as. Because there's no ground for either this or this. Who did I point to first? It was Guy, Peter and Guy, and then Dennis. No.
So if someone identifies as something like a wolf, and say, I'm a wolf, not a man or a woman, I'm just a wolf, and they say, I want you to call me a wolf. You need to refer to me as a wolf. I mean, should people who identify as a wolf, or if a man identifies as a woman,
do you let them do that?
Like, well, if they do, does that trump your right to identify them?
Great question. So this is, I know I appeal to Jamie Winship occasionally, maybe too frequently, but I'll give you Winship's answer to this. He sits down with people. He's big about identity.
He says, who are you in Christ? Tell me who you are in Christ. I don't know. You know what his next question is? Or what the next statement is? Do you know who you are in Jesus? No, what are you talking about? Do you want to know who you are in Jesus? Yes, I do. What's his next statement?
Let's ask him.
Yeah. And he sits down with them and he prays. And he basically doesn't let them get up until they come up with their identity. So, you're a hostage in Christ. You're a hostage. It's actually not that bad. He gets him to go Oprah every time. He's sitting down from across, this is in Atlanta, from a African-American drug dealing troublemaker. The guy is, Conan, this guy was a monster. Human, just a specimen, and he's in tears, right? Like, what's the ESPN show that the guy's always he always gets him crying to? I forget, but anyway, this guy is crying because he prayed to God and God gave him a vision of this identity. And the identity was not this; it was something different than that. But the idea was, God's in to him, and I believe it spoke to him. This is who you are to me. This is who you are to me. Now. So that it's for those that are trying to take that from a spiritual context and understand it better, imagine this. Imagine you're a fiancé. Congratulations to the new fiancés. Or your husband or wife or whatever. The most meaningful thing that they say to you is something along these lines. This is what you are to me. And then fill in the stuff that you write in the card or the letter that you hope that your kids don't find or whatever else it is out there. But the idea is what that person whom you love thinks you are to them is the most meaningful, deepest part of your identity, probably, at least when it comes to your relationship with them. It's no different with God, and God is your creator. He actually knows what he purposed for you to do. So if you want to be happiest, here's the bottom line. And here's the answer to anybody who's transgender, wants to be transgender, wants to be asexual, wants to do all that kind of stuff. Forget that. Do you want to be happy? Do you want to be happy? Then this is the answer, whether you like right, wrong, or indifferent. Whether you like it or not, not right, wrong, or different, whether you like it or not, there is a God, and he has an identity for you. And that identity will make you the happiest you can possibly be. If you're interested in being happy, you ought to want to know what that identity is. Do you want to know what that identity is? Find out. And if they're willing to submit themselves to God, what they'll probably find is if they genuinely are asexual, they're a eunuch called by God to do something that eunuchs do. That's what it boils down to, right?
Sorry.
Nobody.
So like this whole discussion of idea of like sex and gender, like it's more of like a classification than it is part of your identity. There's a fine line there, but it's like, you know, I'm white, I'm Jewish, you know, whatever is a classification that society has made in order to put people into boxes. And this seems like just another box that shouldn't be part of what Christ has identified as your identity, because it seems more man-made, this idea of sex gender, than it is from God.
And let me make a comment on that and then go to Dennis. I take a pride in being Scottish. Okay, I like that my people came from the Highlands. I like that you guys seen the Highlander. You remember the castle in it? That's my clan's castle.
You wear dresses.
We wear kilts.
You just moved a couple notches.
We have these old claymore. I don't know if you've seen it. 5'11" now makes a tactical kilt.
I saw that. I did see that. 5'11" is the law enforcement military gear store. They make a tactical kilt.
So, I've been to the Scottish games where we throw rocks and hammers and stuff around, and you know, bagpipes, which are nerve grating to anybody who's not Scottish, but are the sweetest sound in the world. And when you play bagpipes, I get my adrenaline and testosterone both fire up, and I'm like, let's go to war. I just start marching, and I'm like, where are you going? I don't know. So we're going to go fight. But you know what I do? And so I actually consider getting kilts for the boys when they're little toddlers, and you know why I don't? Why I'm not going to do that? Why am I not going to?
You don't want to get him a shit out of school.
Any Scotsman can handle himself.
Because you're flipping by himself.
That's not God's identity for them. That is part of the world choosing something that you want to take pride in, and it's wrong. It's wrong. And it's the reason that Scotsmen beat up Englishmen, and Englishmen beat up Scotsmen, and Scotsmen beat up Romans, and Romans beat up Scotsmen, and Scotsmen beat up everybody that walks into Scotland. And then when there's nobody in Scotland, they beat up each other.
Yeah.
It's because they have chosen an identity other than what God's identity was for them. When they became quote unquote civilized, which is still arguable today, and as a Scotsman I can say that, some of the greatest philosophers and mathematicians and physicists have come out of Scotland. Maybe their purpose in God was to be some of God's thinkers, not to be some of God's warriors. Okay, and there were great warriors that came out of Scotland too, but at the end of the day, what's the purpose for my boys and for me? It's not to be a proud kilt-wearing bagpipe player. That is a choice that I'm making if I choose to do that, and it's a wrong choice because it differs from this and it differs from that. And that's why I don't do it.
2 points. The first one, you mentioned Scotland and the Scottish. I'm 100% Irish. Yesterday, Ireland, by an overwhelming vote, legalized same-sex marriage, a Catholic country. Now, I just wanted to get that in.
Second, believe, by the way, to your first point, if you believe that, if you believe what you purport to believe, you're not 100% Irish.
What?
You're between somewhere, at least if you to 23andMe is correct, you're somewhere between 1.3 and 3% Neanderthal, as is every human being. So, you can't be 100% Irish. But anyway, go ahead.
It's a good thing we're in a church. Second point is, all of this lecture you gave, the long and the short of it is, if somebody wants to change their gender, if somebody wants to be a homosexual, a practicing homosexual, Christianity forbids that.
It's different. If that's the point that you got from me, you missed the point.
Then what's the point?
If you want to be happy, find your identity and your purpose.
So if transgender decides he wants to be happy being a woman.
Now here let me generalize it, because any true principle ought to be generalizable across the spectrum of questions. The answer to the question, what gender am I or should I be, is the identical answer, zero difference between that question and what should I do for a living, and what kinds of things ought I be doing in this society, and how should I treat my neighbor, and how should I treat my mom and dad. The answer to every single one of these questions is identical. All of them. There's no difference at all. And the answer is, there is a set of guidelines that if you want to be happy, because ultimately all this ought to be about happiness. You don't ask the question of, what gender am I and I want to be miserable. It's not, how should I treat my wife so that I can be miserable? It's not, how should I interact in society so we can have a miserable society? The underlying idea here is, I want to be happy, what's my identity? I want to be happy, how do I treat my wife? I want to be happy, what should our society look like in order to build the maximum amount of happiness? I want to be happy with my neighbor, how do I treat him? It's an identical answer. Every single one of them is identical. There is a single way to be happy. And there's only one person in the whole universe who might actually possibly know that answer to any amount of reliability. You want to look at humanity and decide whether we know the answer? We got a few thousand years at a minimum, maybe more, to say we've not got it figured out, and it doesn't look like we're any closer to it. I would go ask, if you want to know how the vehicle runs, ask the engineer. You want to know what a person should do, ask the maker. That's my lesson. You want to be happy, find your purpose and identity.
So
it's not, you
wrong.
can't do this.
So it would be wrong to change your gender.
It would make you unhappy.
No, it won't.
It will make you less happy than it would if you went and followed this path.
It's like a tattoo you didn't want.
I can go more basic than that. Dennis, it's like people who win the lottery. There's story after story. A poor person plays the lottery, wins the lottery. Wow, my day has come. And then their life is in ruins after that, because all of a sudden all these people come after them for money. They get sued. Now they have money, they get sued. And their life becomes misery as a result of what they thought would make them happy.
Oh, they accidentally won the lottery. Somebody chooses to be a female. Yeah.
I think Carl's point's a good one, but let me give you another one. My buddy is a SEAL, and SEALs are
in like case, a SEAL.
He identifies as a SEAL.
Or a SEAL or like a SEAL SEAL.
You're a Navy
SEAL. No, he's serious. He has a wolf friend. He could have. You don't know what this guy's capable of.
My friend's a Navy commander. And as a Navy commando, as you know, they're incapable of not writing books about themselves or joining Hollywood and making movies about themselves. So he is, I don't know if you know, but if anybody seen the movie The Rock? The Rock, the SEALs in The Rock were real SEALs. With the exception of, obviously, Sean Connery, Nick Cage, the Hispanic gentleman that always plays a special operator in every movie he's in. And who's my other one? Oh, and the guy that always plays a SEAL team captain, no matter what movie he's in. So here are guys who chose. So Dennis, to your question, these are guys that chose to be actors. They want to be famous. They want to be famous because they think being famous is going to make them happy. I'll skip Sean Connery because the story's a long one. Nick Cage was drunk the whole time he was there. The SEAL team captain was on heroin the whole time he was there. And the other guy was, you know, same kind of thing, kind of crazy. And the SEALs were sitting around on set, and they keep a psychiatrist on set with meds the entire time they're filming. That's how Hollywood runs, because actors are crazy. And they were asking the psych, they finally kind of, they're sitting around, you sit around in your gear for 8 hours, you shoot for 5 minutes, and then you go back and sit in your gear. That's how making movies work with those guys. And they finally asked the psych, they were like, what is wrong with these actors? And they expected to hear some kind of DSM, you know, 4 type of diagnosis, and the psych was like, actors are crazy. And they were like, okay, I guess we can say it now, then why are they so crazy? And he says, look, this is important. He says, you guys actually do what it is that you say you do. You say you're a SEAL, and you go and you do commando stuff, and you go swim under the water, and you jump through the air, and you shoot guns, and you attack America's enemies. These guys pretend. Then they, as a result, they get adoration, and they get love from other people for somebody that they're not. It's not their identity. Sean Connery is loved not for being Sean Connery. He's loved because he's James Bond. Nick Cage is loved because he's whatever he is. But the idea is when people adore them, they all realize what Harrison Ford realizes. You love Han Solo, you don't love Harrison Ford. And that is a confusion of identity that leads to unhappiness, and they are miserable. And the majority of actors in Hollywood, as a guy who gets to mess around with those guys more frequently than you might think for an army guy, they are unhappy. As a lot.
God's sake. Famous actors in Hollywood are unhappy.
Absolutely. And by the way, don't take my word on that. Do any research you want for 10 seconds and you'll find out that that's the truth.
So the guys that are typecast are slightly more happy than the ones that...
Right. You can imagine that Tony Stark, that's what's his name, is a little bit better, because that's probably who that guy is.
Question that we need to decide. What I don't agree with is that all these things are going to make us happy.
Okay, so he agrees with identity is the core issue, but he disagrees that all these things will make us happy. Yeah. So it might be the call to tell you who you are. So you might want to.
If you're looking,
it's my pen.
If you're looking for these things to make you happy, you're not going to find happiness.
Okay, so if you're looking for these things to make you find happy, you're not going to find happiness. I would say, let me make a clarification then and see if it joins our 2 points. Why you should do this, on the one hand, it might be, there are a couple reasons to it, because what does this mean? What are we really saying here? This is about praying the following prayer. God, I know you're my creator, and you are my rightful Lord. If you are my rightful Lord, then you probably have orders for me. You have things you want me to do. I want to do those things for you. Now, that can be motivated by a couple things. One, fear, right? Because I understand that if that's not the case, you're either going to throw me in hell forever, or you're going to destroy me, or whatever the end is there. Another motivation, with a better one, would be love. I love you for what you built and who you are and all that kind of stuff, and so I want to obey you. And another motivation might be, well, you know what? I actually just want to be happy, and I imagine you got the right answer to it. What human among us makes that decision without having a little bit of all three of those motivations? Fear, love, and desire to be happy. If you are one of those three, Steve, congratulations, you are a better man than I am. Actually, I can probably say unequivocally you're a better man than I am. But if you have isolated and only done one of those, and it's not fear, especially if it's love, then that is an amazing thing. I don't think most people do that. Maybe nobody does that, but certainly not most people, at least the people I know. So, why does God provide us, and this is a separate question, but why does God provide us motivations like fear if that's not the right way to be motivated? If the glory of God is the thing to see, why not just say, this is what makes me most glorified? The answer is the same answer to how you raise kids. You don't raise a 2-year-old by being like, son, let me explain something to you. Ultimately, your actions right here could potentially leak out and cause some confusion and unhappiness with your brother and this and that. And, you don't do that. You're like, hey, you do it again, you can get smacked or whatever it is, however you deal with your kids. You start there, and as they grow and mature, by the time that they're done, they ought to be acting out of love instead of acting out of fear. And God knows us because he built us, and he knows that that's how it works for us too. Jeremiah and the Venison, or Jeremiah Schuyler does.
So what confuses me still is that, like, it seems like if you're gay, like, that's not really a choice. That, like, there's some people that's just how they are. But it seems like whenever you look at, like, Leviticus and Deuteronomy, and people make these arguments for why homosexuals go to hell or whatever, that it just seems like there's a disconnect there, and I'm not really sure what that answer is.
So let me respond by getting righteously indignant for a second. If when I look at somebody who's gay and I say, you ought not act on this, who self-identifies as gay, like, I like men sexually, I don't like females sexually. One, there's actually a bunch of questions I want to ask him, but generally speaking, we're not allowed to ask those questions in today's culture, and you can't do it without offending. But I will tell you something, this is anecdotal. Every homosexual that I know, with whom I have a personal, close relationship, all of them were either molested when they were kids, they had a confusing sexual encounter as a kid. That could include everything from when they were kids, their parents thought that they were behind in development, and so their doctor, took them to an endocrinologist, the endocrinologist examined them physically. And that created sexual confusion for that 6-year-old boy.
Scott, this is just baloney.
I'm not done talking, so let me get this part out. When people say, so I'm not saying everybody who's gay was molested. That's not my point. But what I'm saying is gender confusing stuff happens way, way earlier than we pay attention to.
It's
in our culture.
It's not gender. Homosexuality is not gender confusion.
Okay, fine. Sexual orientation confusion happens early on. And it's because we do not treat kids as protectively in some senses than we ought to. We don't always think through everything that we do. That's point one. Point two is this. When I look at somebody who is homosexual and I say, chooses to be homosexual, I'm going to say, chooses to be homosexual, to act homosexually, and I say, you ought not do that, and they say, what right do you have? And I'll say, the same right that I have to say it to me. And we've said this many times in the class before, and so I'm actually tired of saying it because I don't like highlighting it. And I'm giving Jeremiah a hard time, I'm actually giving Dennis a hard time on this one. My desire is to be sexually profligate. I want to sleep with a lot of different women. That is, and I don't do that. Why? Because this. And I know that it won't make me happy. That's part of it. So, I mean, my pragmatic reason, I know it won't make me happy. But ultimately, I'm not asking you to be any more obedient than I'm asking me to be. So by what right do I have? I'm asking you to live by the same standard I live by. You know what we call that? Society.
Yeah, that's right.
Period. So what if it doesn't hurt anybody? I disagree with the premise. It hurts somebody. It hurts them, and it hurts the people they talk to. In the same way, if I'm asleep with a bunch of women that are willing, does it hurt anybody? You better believe it helps her husband. Hurts her husband. You better believe it hurts the person with whom she ought to be.
Hurts her.
You better believe it hurts her, and it hurts me. This is nonsense to say this hurts nobody. If this is true, it does hurt somebody. And if this is true, it's not gay that hurts somebody only. It's straight that hurts somebody only. It's driving that hurts somebody only. It's getting angry and honking at people in traffic. It's stealing food from somebody. It's stealing money from your company. All of these things are morality. Either there's morality or there's not. If there's morality, then there's purpose. If there's purpose, then there's identity. Okay? All of these things work together, and they're all sourced in something that's off the blackboard in God.
So what you're saying, Scott, is if you're a homosexual and you're attracted to a man, I say I'm a homosexual, I'm attracted to a man, a lust form or whatever, and I do something, that's the same as if I were just a heterosexual and I was attracted to a woman that did the same thing.
I'm saying
as equally.
Let me make this
a Christian that's equally sinful.
I want to ground it in something different than that. This is how I want to say it. Somebody says to me, "Well, I'm a homosexual," and I say, "Stop. Where'd you get your identity? Did you get your identity from God? Did God tell you that his identity for you is to be homosexual?" No. He will never tell anybody your identity is homosexual. Tell you your identity is a eunuch, but he will never tell you it's homosexual. In the same way that he won't tell me, I'm like, well, God, I mean, you don't understand. I'm an undisciplined Scotsman. That's how we are. We drink whiskey. We sleep around a lot. We beat people up. That's my identity. He'll be like, that's not who your identity is. You didn't ask me. I'll tell you what your identity is. It's different. I adopted that on my own. Now, that I may have a lot of significant tendency that way. So, I mean, when I hear somebody, when somebody disagrees with me, even in class, if they're strident about it, do you know what my emotional reaction is to it? Do you know what my ungoverned reaction is to it? Combat. Is that the right thing to do? No, that's stupid. That's stupid. But should I say, well, that's who I am. What's your right to tell me no? You've offended me, and I want to respond in a way that is natural to me. That's who I am. That's how I feel for you to tell me that I'm not supposed to feel like that, or that I shouldn't act in accordance with my feelings. What does that sound exactly like? Somebody who identifies as homosexual or whatever else. There's no difference at all. It has to do with either there are rules that we ought to live by. And by the way, the ought isn't just I want to be a school teacher and tell you what to do. The ought is this purpose will make you the happiest you can be. Or there are not, in which case you're right, then all the rules are wrong.
I was just thinking, to Dennis's point, if I can speak for you, Dennis.
No, you
if
can't.
A homosexual says, hey, I've just always felt this way. I've never been molested.
Don't get me wrong. There are homosexuals like that. I'm just saying it's not insignificant.
So pick one of those. Just always felt this way. And now you're telling me that God says that is morally wrong. That I'm doing something, not like choosing a job, and I can be an architect, I can be a painter, whatever. I have that choice. But God's telling me the way that He made me, the way that I've always felt from birth, is morally wrong.
So
does that seem unfair?
I want to go back and say that's not right.
So how do we unravel?
But what you said isn't right either.
It really gets to the question.
Hang on, what I want to say.
Where does identity flow from? Is that something we're born with? Or is that something that's culturally influenced? And if we're going to make the argument that, hey, it's culturally influenced and, you know, there's therapy, whatever, that's one set of arguments. But if we're making the argument that our identity for sexual preference or who we feel we are actually is built in from birth, then how is that condemnable?
That's a very, very good point.
Isn't that exactly what he was saying about his...
I don't see the difference.
Scottsdale's angry...
I'm not sure we've identified it.
So do you think that my desire... I mean, Carl said it. You can see the kids acting a certain way. When I was in fourth grade kindergarten, my teacher came to my mom and she said this. Your son is going to have a lot of trouble in life. And mom, who's the director of the kindergarten, says, what do you mean? She says, he is unreasonably idealistic and he wants justice done in every sense. And she's like, what are you talking about? I said, this kid takes a block from that kid. He insists that kid give it back. He wants to maintain absolute justice and parity throughout the entirety of this chaotic one teacher, 10 kid environment. She goes, he's unrealistic and it's going to be tough for him. That's who I was.
Well, how was this answering his question?
That's who I was born. That's the way that I've been from my earliest time. If that is something that has developed into this kind of idea about when I see something wrong, I want to do something physical about it. Does that mean I'm right to do so? No, it doesn't. That's still something that can be governed. But I want to take exception to something you said even earlier of, well, maybe you're born with these certain sets of tendencies, but you know, you can choose to be an architect or whatever else. No, you can't, not in this model. You're not, you are free to do anything. You can violate these things. But you don't get to choose to be an infantryman or an artilleryman. You're told which one you will be, because there is a purpose that you fill. And this is what I'm saying to the person who wants to be an astrophysicist, to the person who wants to be a doctor, to the person who wants to be a lawyer, a cop, all that other stuff. You might have chosen differently than God would have chosen you, and I can tell you for a fact that I did. So I chose a career differently than God would have had me choose. I did not ask His identity for me, and I went and pursued my own identity. And so now I'm sitting in a class talking about philosophy and theology after having studied history. I got a bachelor's of science in the history of war. How useful is that?
It's interesting.
Yeah, and that's about it. No eternal value at that point. That's my point is, there's not a decision that you make in your life, maybe even down to the clothes you pick to wear, that doesn't say something about who you are and what you believe, and doesn't have feedback that God might have given you. If you don't think that's the case, look at what God called some of the people to do in the Old Testament and see how much their identity flowed from that, and how much of what they choose to do flowed from that. And look at the rules that He gave. We had two Jewish guys in here. Down to how they dressed, God had an opinion on it. You think that that's random? No. You think that wasn't meaningful? There was purpose behind it. And the purpose was to drive a mindset and an identity in the Jewish people of this is what the people of God do, and even the way you dress is
going like to be like a belt, hold up your faith. It's 613
commandments.
Steve, and then
Doug. I think what Elisha's point is being this, is what criteria do you use to define your identity?
So how do we define our identity? Yeah.
What criteria?
And that's kind of where I was going, because when we look at the Old Testament, for example, when the Bible condemns certain sexual behaviors, yeah, like homosexuality, yeah, and whatnot, it's making that condemnation based on anatomy. It's not making it based on, hey, do you feel like you're a man who loves a man? Have you always felt that way? It's not getting into that. It's just making the blanket statement that a man lies with a man, that's the test.
Well, and we shouldn't, and we wouldn't be surprised if the designer's purpose of the person's identity happens to line up with what they are scientifically. I mean, you would expect to see that, right?
We also kept slaves in the Old Testament, and women didn't have rights, so let's just make sure we remember.
It's not true that women don't have rights in the Old Testament at all.
Slavery in the Old Testament, and people get upset when people bring this up, as though I'm making this up.
Go research it if you don't believe it. Indentured servitude. Mandatory release program.
But not every slave was an indentured slave.
No, that's correct. And some of them, it was punishment. And by the way, God submitted his own people to that too. So remember, the chosen people, God said, when you mess this up, I'm going to make you slaves of the Babylonians and the Assyrians. And he did. So slavery doesn't, remember why God lets things happen to people. He's not interested in your being as happy as you think you want to be in the way that you want to be in this world. He's got no interest in that.
That's right.
What he's interested in is loving you and getting you into a loving relationship with him and maximizing the amount of people that do that as well. And if you have to suffer, imagine, let's ask this question. If you had to suffer and be miserable your entire life, including torture, but as a result, he was going to come to know and love God. Whereas if you had not, he would not. Would you do it?
Sure, yeah.
That's everybody's answer that loves somebody, and yet we act like that's crazy when it happens to us in life. Why? Because we don't ask God. Guy, to answer your question, and this is where I'm going to get more mystical maybe than RBC is comfortable with.
Yes.
You want to know what your identity is, you ask God. He will tell you. If you ask it and you mean it, and you don't hold anything back, he will show you who you are. But you have to mean it, and you have to not stop it. And he will give you a vision, or he will give you a dream, or he will bring you a prophet who will tell you a vision or dream for you, or he will give it to you in a way that is just unequivocal. That's my belief. Why? That's happened in my life. I've watched it happen in other people's lives. I have enough data to say that I see that this is a reality, and so I want to recommend it, at least as a consideration to you. If that's a little too mystical for you, let me put it this way. You want to know what your identity is? Is this a legitimate question for a person to ask? Is it a legitimate question? Yeah, absolutely. Jesus said what? Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened unto you. For to him who asks is given, and he who seeks finds, and him who knocks the door is opened unto him. You want to know, God will give you the knowledge. He's not going to tell you something, though, that you're not ready to hear. And with that? So let me also say why I've been talking a little more vehemently than normal in this class. My reasons for doing so are two. One, I'm passionate about purpose and identity. What I can say is this. If you get nothing else out of Solid Ground ever, it's that you have a purpose, and you will be happiest and in the most amount of love if you can find that purpose. Listen to nothing else I say, but find your purpose in God. Listen to no argument that I make, but find your purpose in God. Listen to nothing else that is ever bannered around this class, but find your purpose in God, and you will have made me as happy as I can be with respect to your church. And the other reason I get up about this one is this is an emotional thing. Sometimes if you happen to govern with a little more force, people stay a little tighter than they normally do. Some people accept it.
Finally?
Go ahead.
I've heard a lot of crap tonight.
Yeah.
But today is the Hall of Fame all-time crap I've ever heard.
Come next week.
And let me tell you, what do you hear from me? And let me tell you why that is.
And if your warrior things are coming out, you're going to get a receipt.
That's because The reason you think it's crap is because you don't believe in this. If you believe in this, then what? Who believes in this? Show of hands. Keep your hand up if you don't. If you believe in this, but you think what I'm saying doesn't make sense. Okay, a couple. So I got three. That's good. The majority of people, if this is where you're coming from, what I'm saying makes sense. Now, we still want to, I'd love to hear the rest of it too. But, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
I'm probably say a little more tactfully than Dennis, but you and I are complete separate.
So we got 4 minutes. Go.
So a lot of this talked about like adult kind of grown up decisions about, hey, yeah, the stories that compel me on gender identity are the kids.
Yes.
The young kids, and I look at it and those are the ones where I go, this is not something that God does. This is not a situation that God puts on us as developed followers to deal with. That is a child who is, by all accounts, struggling amazingly with a very complex identity issue. And that's where, you're very simple. Well, ask God. Look, he's three. He's four. He can't ask God, and it's when I see the testimonies from the parents of how they deal with this, it tears me up. So that one, and you're big on whenever we have these discussions, you go to this far outlier and go, well, if this situation is wrong, then they're all wrong. So right here, I don't want to talk about Bruce Jenner because it seems like a train wreck to me. And I go, okay, whatever, he's not hurt anybody, but still, it seems like a train wreck. Go to the kids. That biological, 3-year-old, 4-year-old girl,
yeah,
who is a boy, by all accounts, by every fiber of their being, how do you deal with that as a parent? What do you do, and how do you respond to that as a member of society and as a Christian? Because there doesn't seem to be a clear, like, well, good class, everybody, we're wrapped up.
So there's nothing on the board that really is.
No. Well, that's why the idea of, hey, there's this clean spectrum and ask God and we'll sort it out, high five, I reject the premise of that because it seems like it has to be more complicated.
Fair enough, and I will make, so I will give you three statements and we'll see if you agree with them, because I bet you'll agree with them, and the answer to your full answer to your question, we're treating this in less than an hour, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great.
If the parents were perfect and understood everything about how all this works, would they be able to help that child out?
If anybody was perfect and understood
how... It's an if.
Yeah,
but
sure.
So I want to put this in very difficult terms, especially for parents. A lot of this is parents' fault. A lot of this is parents' fault, and that's tough to take on. Now, it's parents' fault, not like you're necessarily equipped to do that kind of thing, but in a fallen society... If you forget your fallen parents, you've forgotten something basic. And the society's probably telling you wrong stuff, too. So even if you're doing what the society tells, what your best guess is of what that is, you may still be wrong. This is why the only people who are going to parent perfectly are perfect parents. The only people who are perfect parents are parents who are in perfect dialogue with God. So part of that, I would say, parental fault. Would you agree that at least part of that is parental?
No. Okay. What? I'm going to...
That's fair enough. That's all right. I disagree with
it. Right.
Secondly, let me put it this way. You don't have to... If we had stayed in the gardens... If you're like, whose phone's going on?
That to me is selecting on the pen. You're going, there's a problem with the kid. Ipso facto, there's a problem with the parents. You're going backwards. And what you said was,
here's the kid's identity.
Huh?
Okay. He's getting confused.
No. Not getting. There is a...
Inherently.
Right. Different.
No, I would say,
as a child, as a young child, not a 50, 60-year-old.
No, I got you. What I'm saying is the kid isn't confused until he comes into contact with something. The kid feels like he feels. It's not until, hang on, Dennis. Just let me finish this because I'm running out of time.
This is how boys act and this is how girls act. It's like, oh, but I...
It's him running into stuff that makes him confused. He doesn't start to.
If you want to do gender as a social construct, I'm totally there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Gender is a social construct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's what answers it.
Yeah. And so that part...
No, because when the kid who wants to play with Barbie dolls, who wants to cook instead of wrestle and play with trucks, runs up to culture and says, that's what girls are supposed to do, then he goes, oh, then I'm a girl. Because that's what culture's telling me, like, those are the things
that's exactly the point. And so my second point is this: in heaven, had we not fallen, we wouldn't run into this. Okay, because my kid, my brother played with a Easy Bake Oven and a sewing thing when he was a kid. Didn't turn him into a girl, but it had some, you know, there's implications that you have to think about, all that kind of stuff. In heaven, where we parent perfectly, that's not a problem. That becomes not a problem. The last thing is, in all of these considerations of, is this true? Do you agree that we have a purpose? That God has a purpose for each person in this world specifically. Do you agree that we have identity in God? The idea is this: in a fallen world, because of what we've chosen to do, including even the way that we breathe, which I think is part of the answer to the conundrum that you brought up that we haven't even addressed, is not the way God would have had us do it. Now, God takes confused, broken people who have forgotten purpose and identity, and he brings them back. So even though the kid's confused, the question is, if it took him being confused at 5 in order to come to Jesus at 18, is it worth it?
You have now adopted this perfect.
I'm just
knowledge.
Asking. I'm asking. Yeah, I'm pretending. I'm
yes,
talking
you,
about
you
the
are,
God.
And that's God. And that is my. That's part of my objection is, you know, you take all these scenarios and you kind of analogize them and go, well, this is what I, Scott, had to deal with, and it's the same thing, and that's a frustrating.
It's in the same category though, but that's why I'm saying. Why is it more confusing? I'm going to be running out of time here, but answer me this question. Why is it more? Why do you have the right to say, maybe it's one way of putting it, but why do you think that it's more meaningful to be confused about your gender than to be confused about violence?
I think it's more meaningful to be for you outside to go, you being confused about your gender is just like me being confused about violence.
It is. Because
no,
they're both
not.
Are they not
that
both derivative?
Is,
are they not both derivative of this?
You don't have the standing to say that. You don't know what it's like for them to be confused about their gender. You don't know that.
Then why?
You know what it is like for you to be confused about violence and promiscuity.
So let me ask this question: why do you think you know what it is for me to be confused about violence?
Because I want to hit you right now.